This is Jim Speary. It is February 24th, 2012 at Camp Dwyer, Helmand Province, Afghanistan. I'm with the current XO of where I am. Sir, please tell me your name.
It's James R. Mitchell.
And you're captain, correct, sir?
That's correct, a captain.
Now, Captain Mitchell, we have a little bit of a connection via my members of my family. Before we get started, tell me just a little bit about that connection.
Well, yes, I was privileged enough to have Speary as a classmate of mine at the New Mexico Military Institute, where we were both in the Dog Pound, Charlie Company, or Charlie Troop, I should say. And yeah, we had a lot of fond memories of running amok at the New Mexico Military Institute, where I was pretty much started my military career, and was later able to get my commission, and then pursued an aviation career. And Speary at the time had not really expressed much of an interest in the commissioning program, so I was surprised to see him a couple years later filling up at the gas stop there at right on Fort Rucker Prime, you know, home of the flight school. And he and I exchanged words real quick. At first, we were just surprised to see each other there, and then it was kind of neat to kind of reconnect with our past. So yeah, it was really, really neat to see what a small world it is after all.
You're talking about my younger son Jimmy, who's now at W3.
And
he flies those big ones.
Yeah,
as he would say, the Chinooks.
He flies the school bus, as we like to call it in the Army aviation world. But yeah, Jimmy flies the 47s. Yep.
Well, just a short story to tell you. He told me one time, he says, "Well, Dad, you know, the only time a Blackhawk goes as fast as a Chinook is when we're slinging it." So we won't go there anymore, being that I'm surrounded by Blackhawks now.
Yeah, but he still needs two rotors to get him there.
There you go. Captain Mitchell, tell me a little bit about what your current job is here in Afghanistan as we kind of are in the fourth quarter of your deployment.
Okay, well, now that we're in the fourth quarter, I'm the senior captain in the company. Second in command is the XO for the company, underneath Major Holland as the commander. Pretty much my job is to pretty much do all the bidding and taskings of the commander, and act in his stead when he's not around. So I'm pretty much follow up as the enforcer and making sure that things are getting done, deadlines are being met, and that overall that the mission is being accomplished without the commander having to worry too much about it.
Have you deployed before?
I have deployed before. In 2004, I was deployed to the Balkans in support of Operation New Dawn for Kosovo.
Now here in Afghanistan, part of Enduring Freedom.
Affirmative. Operation Enduring Freedom now here in Afghanistan. So,
this mission that you are in charge of here is really unique. It is where the Army is supporting the Marines, and you're working together. Tell me a little bit about that scenario and how that's come to pass.
Well, I don't know how many people may or may not know this, but the Marine Corps does not have medical assets of any kind. So when they go to war, their medical support and services are provided by the United States Navy, and specifically with the air ambulance business, which I'm in, we provide pretty much dedicated service for the Marine Corps in that respect. So, you know, that is our customer. That's what we're here for, is to support the Marine Corps throughout the Helmand Province. This is a Marine Corps controlled sector, RC Southwest. So that's pretty much our job. With the Army having the largest dedicated dust-off fleet, we're the primary go-to customer, or I should say service provider, when it comes to medevac dust-off.
So it's a pretty good picture and example of working in a cohesive atmosphere, unlike, like, you know, you can't have like the Congress, for example, you can't have arguments left or right. You guys all got to work on the same page.
Oh, absolutely. And we get along great. You know, they know what we're here to do, to provide the, you know, life-saving service for them, and we know that they're the you know, the servicemen and women that are, you know, took the same oath as we did, and they're here to serve a purpose. And so it's really a camaraderie. I mean, you can have your Army jokes and your Marine Corps jokes, but that, you know, when the bullets start flying, you know, we are brothers in arms, and you know, we'll do anything to get another one out of harm's way. So it's really neat, to say the least, and a great honor to serve with fellow Marines, to get them out of harm's way when, you know, the most terrible day they've ever had is probably at the time when we're being called. So,
Um, d- During this time that you're here, have you been to the other places, or have you been at Dwyer the whole time?
No, I have been at Fob Delarome, and I was also at Fob Eddie, and then obviously here.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other places. Eddie, for example.
Okay.
Probably one of the busiest medical evacuation places in the entire war. Tell me what experience has done for you.
Well, you know, we've all kind of talked about what it's like to fly out of Fob Eddie, and I think we all come back to the unanimous statement that Fob Eddie is as combat dust off as you're going to see in the present world, as far as, you know, lives are on the line. It's a hostile situation. It is combat, and you know, it definitely tests the mettle of the aviators. It tests the mettle of the medics. It tests the mettle of the crew chiefs. So it is definitely the Super Bowl, as we like to call it in aviation, when it comes to doing your job.
During this particular, we'll call it like what you just said, this kind of testing of everybody's strength. I know from previous conversations with other folks, you're pulling off this mission with basically half the people and doing twice the load. How did you overcome that obstacle?
Well, you know, that's really where it comes down to, you know, relying on the guy standing next to you and kind of doing shoulder to shoulder, as our sergeant major likes to say back home, where, you know, just you have to pick up the slack. I mean, you know, you really have the, you know, one of two options. You can fail to do your mission and people are going to die, or you can step up to the plate and double down on the work that you're doing to get the mission accomplished and try to save the lives that you're here to save. So basically it just doubles down on everybody's workload and try to make sure that all the bases are covered, and as long as you're putting the mission first, which is executing the medevac mission, you know, there hasn't been any problems. You know, obviously there's challenges as we go, but you know, that's what professionals are for, is you find a way to adapt and overcome the situation that you're in and to accomplish the mission and, you know, ultimately get the guy out of there.
When you were a young person going into your first semester at New Mexico Military Institute in college, your first semester there, did you have this in mind that 10 years later or 12 years later you'd be doing what you're doing now? Is this what your vision was?
Oh, absolutely not. I wanted to be a fighter pilot getting shot off the edge of an aircraft carrier. So, you know, life takes interesting twists, and, you know, I'm a big believer that God has the final say-so, and if you want to make him laugh, tell him what your life plans are and your life goals are, as he'll toss them upside down. But, you know, I couldn't have picked a better place, because, you know, when I'm finally where I'm at, I am very honored to do the job that I'm doing, and being given the opportunity to perform in this capacity is something that I will cherish for the rest of my career and my life.
I'm presuming you're at about the 10 or 12 year mark in your career, is that correct?
I'm actually at the 15 year mark. I was actually enlisted. I enlisted early as a 17 year old high school guy before I went off to the military institute. So I got to serve about 3 years as an enlisted guy, and then went to the institute to pursue a commission as a lieutenant.
Okay, that's really interesting. I did not know that. How old are you now then?
I am 32.
Okay. So you've seen the whole gambit. So obviously with 15 in, you're pushing for that 20, is that correct?
Absolutely. Got to get the 20. I can't come fast enough.
You have a family back home?
I do. I have a wife and two kids.
And how old are your kids?
My son is 6, so I'm coming up on 7, hopefully as soon as I get home. And my daughter is 11, going on 12 this summer. So.
And the children's name?
My daughter's name is Lindsay, and my son's name is Ethan.
And your wife's name?
Shauna Mitchell.
How long have you been married?
12 years.
Very good. And where does everybody live? Where do you call home?
Right now we call home Rio Rancho, New Mexico. So that's where we've been living for the last 10, 12 years. With a little exodus to go to flight school.
Well, then that kind of makes us neighbors, because I'm on the west side of Albuquerque.
Okay.
I want to talk about one particular event that's pretty well known throughout your company here. The people underneath you did a remarkable mission where they medevaced a Marine that had an RPG embedded in him. Tell me just a little bit about that and how that made you feel when it was all over, how your men performed.
Well, the mission originally came in as a medevac for a local national little girl that apparently had been shot in crossfire from an engagement that had happened earlier that day. So our guys were launched out on that mission, and as they were establishing communication with the LZ, talking to the guys on the ground, and on short final, the Marines that were securing the LZ came under fire from insurgents that were on the ground. So our aircraft had to do a go around, and those guys continued to orbit while the gunfire ensued down below. Then once the LZ was resecured, they came in on short final, landed the aircraft, and as they were I'm not exactly sure when the crew knew about the UXO that was embedded into the U.S. Marine. I'm not sure if it was on the ground or on short final, but nonetheless, the crew had been notified that a Marine had been injured in that recent gunfire that they were talking about. So they were asked if they could medevac the guy out. Obviously, their initial responses were heck yeah, let's do it. But then I'm sure somebody at one point said, wait a minute, this is a UXO, this thing could go off at any point. You know, an RPG in the center of a Black Hawk, even anywhere near it, is going to be pretty much a showstopper for any aircrew, any aircraft. So, they made the decision at that time because they knew that, that Marine's best chance of surviving and going home to see his family was for them to go ahead and throw him on the aircraft and medevac him to FOB Eddie and fly as smooth as they could back to Eddie to get that guy the best medical care that he could get and get him eventually evacuated out. So that's exactly what they did. They made a decision as a crew. Hey, is everybody okay with this? And they all agreed, absolutely. That's what we're here for. It is a risk, but this is a fellow Marine, fellow service member. Let's do what we can to get him out of here. So they even, gave him en route care, gave him a couple IVs and administered some medications to take away a little bit of the pain. And they got him to Eddie without any incident, without the UXO going off. And I can't speak enough highly enough for the crew. So when I found out about it, my first reaction was, wow, and then wow again. and then, secondly after that, I was my recommendation to the commander was at that point that we need to definitely see if we can put these guys in for an award to have them recognized for their bravery, for that their actions that day.
It's quite likely that Governor Susana Martinez will listen to this audio. She's well aware of this particular embed. What would you like to tell her about not only that incident, but your men as a whole?
Specifically for that instance, it's been repeated, maybe not specifically for detail to detail, but there's been numerous occasions where our air crews, to include myself, have landed in hot LZs, what we would call baited LZs, where everything seems peaceful and calm, and you land to only find out that the bad guys are waiting for that unarmed helicopter that they know is unarmed because it's got a Red Cross on the side for basically all hell to break loose. And through all of that, even with knowing after we get back from missions where we have what's called ICOM chatter, where they'll tell us about radio communication that they're intercepting, that the bad guys are talking to each other and saying, here comes the aircraft, and a la willing, we're going to take it down with this RPG and we're going to send the infidel to hell and beyond. Even with knowing all that and being completely unarmed in the sense of an aircraft platform, I can't say enough for the guys the way they're performing and doing the job. I mean, at the end of the day, the reason people are here and the reason that they're sacrificing what they're sacrificing is for their fellow fellow brother in combat and in uniform. So and even to that extent, we've medevaced a lot of local nationals and the other ISAF forces. So it's really about saving a life.
So New Mexico, in its celebration of its 100 years of statehood, is performing a worldly service here, saving lives.
Absolutely. We don't look at the color of the person that we're putting on board the aircraft. We don't look at the nationality. While it does impact us on a personal level, we all execute our jobs as professionals and take a great pride in saving a life, no matter whose it is. Because at the end of the day, that is our mission, and that's why we're here. We're not here to choose the side. We're not here to choose who dies and who lives. We're here to execute our mission to medevac anyone that we're called to do so.
Who was the biggest influence in your life that helped shape you now, who is Captain Mitchell?
That would have to be my father.
Tell me just a little bit about how he shaped you.
Well, my father was was a military vet himself, a Vietnam veteran, and then was in the Air Force while he was in Vietnam, and went off to join the Army. He was 82nd Airborne, you know, the whole parachute jumping and so on and so forth, crawling in the mud. And then he later became a commissioned officer, but then he ended up leaving the military service to pursue service in the ministry, because he felt such a commitment to do so. So, you know, just his military upbringing and the experiences that he had in the military really was woven into who he was as a father. There were times where he was no grace period in his strictness, but only now, being a father myself, do I understand why, and I'm extremely appreciative for it. So, you know, that plus, you know, he raised me to be a God-fearing, Bible-believing a boy like I am now. So it has greatly influenced the way and ease that I have in executing the job that I have, without fear of death or leaving this world prematurely. So to me, that is, that's the ultimate gift that I have been given.
Final question: what do you want to do when you get home first?
Hug my wife and kids and go camping. Get away from all the hustle and bustle, just disappear into the mountains and have a campfire and, sit around and read a story with my kids and just reunite with my children and my wife.
Very good. Captain James Mitchell, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with me here. And it's really good to meet you in person, and send my son's personal greetings to you. Thanks a lot for chatting with me here today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time.
This is Jim Speary. It's February 24th, 2012, Camp Dwyer, Helmand Province, Afghanistan.